Hey folks, how's it going? I'm Joe Malicote, and I'm the owner of Archery World in Vancouver, Washington, and Troutdale, Oregon, Battleground, Washington as well.
I'm Henry Bass, manager of the Battleground, Washington location and part-time professional archer.
All right, folks, what we're going to do is we're going to start doing podcasts. So we're new to this world, so we're going to learn as we go on it. But what we want to do is we want to share our insights with the archery community in all aspects of archery, not one specific genre. We enjoy shooting and have a lot of experience in a lot. And like Henry Bass was saying, he's a professional archery. His accomplishments are international. I'm here local in the Northwest in Vancouver, Washington, Battleground, Washington, and in Northwest Portland. And we're going to expand as we can in our shops, and we are going to try to reach out to everybody and let them know what we're thinking and entertain their questions as well.
A couple of the items that we'll be going over, you know, as well as, you know, not limited to, but, you know, we kind of want to touch base on, you know, some of the, I guess, like the high frequency topics like FOC, you know, what arrow should I be shooting, poundage, bow, you know, how to find the correct draw length, you know, outside of just talking about general things. You know, we're going to start doing some bow reviews on here. You know, in the shops, we carry 8 or 9 major brands. So, we'd like to talk about each one of those, you know, the different selection in arrows, you know, FOC and overkill on FOC, which is kind of a current trend that we see these days. And then we'll also touch base into, you know, quite a few things tournament archery wise.
Yep. So in general, what he's saying is we're going to, we support the archery industry as a whole. We don't pick one specific thing and feel like that we need to pigeonhole our customers or ourselves into. We really stay open-minded about that. So we know just based off of experience that what works for one person doesn't necessarily work for the other person, because there's always a cause and effect. And we're going to kind of talk about those and try to display some of the rumors and that come along with them, and some of the hype that goes along with those things too, because there's always a good part of that that trendy topic, but there's also something that comes along with it that may not get talked about. And since we don't sell a specific thing ourselves, we're not manufacturers, we're not interested in trying to push a specific product. We just want the archery industry to grow. So we're glad that you're tuning in, and hopefully you'll get to hear more about us as we go. So the first thing that we probably want to do is I'll kind of tell you a little bit about me. My name is Joe Malicote. I was in the Marine Corps and the Marine Corps Reserve for 17 years combined. While I was a customer at the Archery World Pro Shop that I now own, the old owners, Max and Jeannie Hall, put it up for sale. And I bought it going on 22 years ago. So it was in July of 1999 that I purchased Archery World Vancouver. Since then, I finished up my career in the Marine Corps. We expanded over to Troutdale, Oregon about 5 years ago because of a lot of our customers coming from there. And now, hiring Henry, we are set up to go into Battleground, Washington. So he's going to run that shop. It's an annex store, so it doesn't have a range in it like our other two, but it is going to be an Archery World and Outdoors. So we're right on the, it's the gateway to Mount St. Helens. So it allows us to carry the crampons, the ice axes, the things, the hiking poles, snowshoes. It'll also allow us to carry the things that still get you in the woods for hunting if you're into that, which is going to be your camp stoves, your spike camp tents and teepee tents. We're looking forward to that one being opened hopefully in early January or maybe at the beginning of February in 2021.
I'm Henry Bass. I've been shooting archery for 15 years now. Got into it through a local youth archery program. Decided in 2010 that I wanted to go professional with the help of Tim Gillingham. I was on the U.S. team for 8 years. Junior and senior teams, traveled around, shot a lot of shoots, you know, had some good success at some and not so much at others. And, you know, been working in the industry since about 2012, when I first took a job at Gold Tip. Position kind of got eliminated. Then I moved to Bowtech, worked there for a year and a half, and then moved into, the archery shop spectrum of things and started working at Archery World. So, still allows me to go shoot, tournaments and things like that and practice daily and, just kind of grow from there on both ends of the spectrum.
So, Henry, I got a question for you. So you're a professional archer. You know what it's like to be at the top, half of a percent of the archers in the world. So with that being said, we get questions about this all the time about how often should I tune my bow? What do you do? All these generic questions that you can't usually answer with a simple sentence. So as an example, I know and have watched you prepare for tournaments, tune your bow, and then finish that tournament, and then go straight in, come back from that tournament, and make adjustments to your bow. Tell me why you do that mentally, and then physically or tangibly to the bow. Why would you make those changes after the tournament?
For tournament shooting, you're always looking for the next best thing, right? Whether it's you or the equipment or maybe it's both. And a lot of times you go to some of these tournaments and you'll find out that your setup's just not quite right. And what I mean by that is your combo between you and the bow might not be as forgiving as, some other setups could be. So, really it's kind of hard to tell if you're set up properly by shooting leagues and shooting practice and doing this and doing that. Not saying that you shouldn't do it, because that's a very important part of a tournament structure, right? You have to go shoot that stuff to kind of mentally prepare. But as far as equipment base, the only way to get your equipment 100% up to snuff is just by going to shoots and seeing how you perform and how it performs under pressure. Sometimes as you get shaken and nerves start flowing and stuff like that, you'll notice that maybe a certain stabilizer combination works a little bit better than others. A lot of people you'll see mounting their sidebars down low. Okay. For me, it aims really good, right? Like to the point where I almost want to get target panic because it aims so good. But I find myself making mistakes because it does aim so easy and everything's easier, that I feel like personally I need to have something to fight back a little bit, right? So I choose to have my stabilizer up on the top. Well, so basically like when I'm going to a tournament, all I'm looking at is X count's nice, but a lot of times I don't go to a tournament that, like Lancaster style, we have very few tournaments like that where the X's is a point. So all I'm looking at is shoot the best I can with what I've got, right? And so, going into a shoot, hopefully you've got confidence going into it and you can make good shots throughout the entire weekend. Occasionally you make a mistake. Well, you can make adjustments, whether it be draw length, poundage, changing arrow setups slightly. I've gone to, some of the, national events, USAC qualifiers, go to one event and felt like I shot awesome. Bow aimed good and everything. Go back home, make some tweaks, go out with some different arrows and different stabilizer setup. Bow doesn't aim as good, but I shot 15 to 20 points higher, that's the thing, is you gotta be willing to play around with stuff and figure out what works best for you. And it may not be what always is the obvious decision.
Well, so I've always had this philosophy. I'm an amateur archer. I try to shoot competitively, but I'll never be at the level that the pros are specifically. But I've always seen this as I've practiced, and as I practice on my own, I can get the bow to shoot and hold really good, and you get into that Zen type flow. And then you go under tournaments and the things start to become unstable, or they don't perform as well as you want, just like you were describing. What I feel like happens is you really need to be taking notes during that particular time. Is it sounds like you're taking a lot of mental notes during the actual national level competitions and the international competitions that you were always a part of. That's where the notes are the most critical to you, not necessarily in the initial setup. Is that what you're getting at?
Yeah. Yeah, so you go to those events, and you know, I understand a lot of people don't have the opportunity to go to that. So you got to do with what you can work with, right? So as, you know, a lot of amateur shooters go into local level shoots, that's where you need to be making your adjustments based off of. The other thing that people don't talk about is your body structure changes from day to day. What you eat, what you drink, what you didn't eat, what you didn't drink, you know, change of routine, you know, and I don't think a lot of people talk about that because I don't think, you know, people kind of pay attention to that. But, you know, I shot Idaho Open 1 year and I wasn't that hungry going into the shoot. And I always try to eat a little something before, and I ate a salad right before I shot. Well, halfway through, I got gassed because that's all I ate. That's all I had in my system. I changed my repetition the repetition that I normally had. I changed from eating a normal decent sized meal before I shoot to just eating a salad. So, and it allowed me to, you know, it just forced me to deteriorate a lot faster than, you know.
Well, you had changed from your normal diet to something you thought was going to benefit you. I was on the rifle team for over a decade with the Marine Corps Reserve Rifle Team. And one of the things that we learned early on is if you drank a cup of coffee in the morning, and you think that by stopping that routine to shoot competition would benefit you, you found out pretty quick that it threw your metabolism off, it threw your whole entire mental game off, and you shook more sometimes just because you didn't have it versus having that caffeine that you normally had on a daily basis. So you're pretty much saying stick to your normal diet, and then don't try to make adjustments specifically for a competition that you've not already experimented with.
Yeah, exactly. You know, go to a local shoot, shoot it with your setup, and then make, you know, make changes from there. You know, there's kind of some changes that you kind of might have to make mid shoot. You know, if you get to a 3D shoot and your sight tape's off or whatever, those are kind of like, you know, the obvious changes that you might make during the event. But, you know, don't go on a rash decision and change, you know, rest adjustments or this or that. You know, usually I try to give the whole tournament as a learning experience, because, you know, let's face it, if you're not leading it, or, you know, you're not sitting in a good position after day one, it's kind of tough to come back on day two, you know. And that's not saying that you couldn't make changes mid tournament. It just, you know, morale wise, it changes everything.
So there's so much information that you're kind of pinning down right now. It's going to be important that we kind of break this segment down, and we're going to talk about each one of these as an individual conversation. You know, the diet specifically, why your sights aren't hitting the same spot they were when you were practicing on a different range, you know, the lighting effects, the atmosphere, those type of things. Those are going to be definitely conversations and podcasts that we talk about as we go, because those are important to understand and know why. I know I was listening to a Bow Junkie podcast with Paige Pierce just about 6 months or so ago, and she was talking about how she, when she was in Europe, or I believe it was Europe, somewhere other than the United States, and she was talking about how the food there wasn't the same as what she was eating here in the United States. And because of that, she could tell in her performance, not only in how she the bow held on the dot when she was aiming, but how she felt confidence was harder to achieve when she was doing that. So these type of things are great to hear from somebody that's doing it every day. So for a lot of people out there, their biggest shoots they may ever do is a local shoot, you know, that might draw 40 or 50 people. They may not ever make it to a national shoot, which is fine, but you want to still take those notes at the highest level that you're going to get to, mental notes and the physical notes for the setup, so that you'll be prepared to make the changes during practice. Would you say after you make those changes, you typically find what you can practice with, and it was shooting as good in practice now as and you're ready to go back to a national tournament?
Sometimes it shoots better. In most cases, if I go to a tournament and I come back home and I've made changes afterwards, a lot of times my setup will shoot better. You know, and then sometimes, you know, you make changes and it goes backwards. You know, that's just where you just got to kind of grind it out and keep trying to figure out how to progress forward, you know. And a lot of people, I think they get stuck, you know, in one section, and so they just leave it. And then over time, they find themselves kind of deteriorating as a shooter. May not be based off skill level or anything like that. It might just be set up that's kind of a setback.
So that experience that you have through your trial and error is exactly what we, as a shop, that we kind of struggle with sometimes with certain customers that might not understand that it can't be made perfect the very first time they do the setup, and they might not understand exactly why. So we are not in the job doing these podcasts to try to get people to come in and press their bows all the time to make these changes. What I've noticed that professional or amateur, about probably 90% of the setups are almost identical, and it's only those small 10% differences between each individual person that really makes the difference. And how do you figure out those 10%? Those are questions that we'll be talking about quite a bit. And then mentioning that, we were talking about that earlier before we did this podcast. You know, some people want to be one percenters is what we call them. They want to do that 1% that no one else is doing. And at the professional level, I would, you know, go out on a limb and say that every single professional archer out there that reaches the podium, they are the one percenters. They have to make changes that will only work for them. But as an amateur trying to become that one percenter, what's the downfall of that if you are doing 90% of everything right and then you want to make all those changes? What would you suggest?
I feel like the biggest thing that I feel is a difference between an amateur and a pro, and you know, people will say otherwise, but is the ability to make changes to them or their equipment. I feel like there's a huge setback in amateurs that you know, don't want to, they want to grow, but they don't know how. And so a lot of them are afraid to make changes to their bow because they shot a 300 once with that bow and they know it can do it again. Well, you might have just got really lucky that day. Not saying that you don't have that skill level, but you might have got really lucky that day, but that wasn't a forgiving setup for you. You just did everything right. What you're trying to do is get a bow set up to where when you do things wrong, it still hits. When you do things right, it's just more in the center.
Well, that's a good way to say it. Now, when he says you might have shot a 300 that day, when we're talking about target archery, there's a specific round called the multicolor round, or the Vegas round, as everybody knows it, that shoots any competition. We're talking about shooting all 30 arrows of a 30-arrow match inside of a circle that is about the size of a 50-cent piece, and the X-ring inside of that is about the size of a dime. Now, I know a lot of people in the Midwest and West or in the East Coast shoot a blue face round, and that is its own scoring system too, but the rings are almost twice the size. So we always talk here, for some reason on the West Coast, we always compare everything to a Vegas round. So if you're shooting 300s on a Vegas round, we feel like that you're competitive as an archer if you can do it on a regular basis. And so, Henry, you got any more thoughts on that subject before we move on?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing is, you know, if you're wanting to get better, you got to be you can't be afraid to make adjustments and go out on a whim and try something new. You know, I've spent, you know, when I was coming up through the ranks and stuff like that, I spent time, you know, I'd be shooting till 4 a.m. at Tim Gillingham's house. He's probably getting tired of me being there every night and all, you know, into early morning and stuff like that, you know, and just making changes, trying this, doing that, you know, tiller tuning, you know, people don't talk a whole lot about that anymore, you know, which is kind of another subject that, you know, that we can talk about later on down the road, but that's just kind of mainly adjusting the limb bolts to change the way the bow feels. You know, playing with stabilizer setups, playing with different tunes. Do I want to knock high tune through paper? Do I want to knock low tear through paper? You know, the
What? Hold on. Let me interrupt you. So you said something that I know we're going to talk about in another podcast. You said, do I want to knock high tear through paper, or do I not want a level tear or a low tear? So everybody's under the assumption that the perfect bullet hole coming through paper at about 6 to 10 feet out of the bow has to be the best performing bow setup that you can possibly have. But what you're doing is saying that's not always the case. So we can't get into it completely right now, but just real quickly, talk about the up and down knock travel that you might want as a tournament archer or as a hunter in general.
So as a hunter, I feel like it's a lot more critical to get a bullet hole because you are adding veins to the front of the arrow. And if you're not got a decent tune out of the bow, then it can create planing and broadheads and other, you know, issues down the road. For a target bow, you don't have that. Typically, you're running smaller vanes than what would normally stabilize an arrow. You're trying to make your drag as low as possible. So one thing that you can do to kind of help increase accuracy, and this obviously changes from bow to bow. You know, I shot Matthews for 7 or 8 years, and I can tell you every tournament, I probably shot a little different tune until I found one that felt good and shot good. And then I just kind of went with that tune for everything. For indoors, I shot about an inch high through paper. I felt like that gave me the most stability out of the bow. But again, I was shooting a single cam Matthews Apex 8. You know, the knock travel on those bows were notoriously not the best in the industry. But, you know, you made it work and they shot really good. You know, with my bows now, you know, I'm shooting a PSE Perform X right now and soon to be a Citation. You know, with those bows, I've kind of found that a level knock travel typically flies a little bit better and groups a little bit better out of those bows. My Supra Focus, I shot a little bit of a knock low, and that's where it shot the best. So it just kind of changes, you know. But really, how I determine that with my target bow is more or less doing a group tune. Okay, basically you draw, you know, you shoot a couple of games or rounds or whatever you want to call it. You shoot a couple of 300 rounds, you know, and you basically look at the target and you do a diagnostic off of it. Okay, if you're sighted in and you know you're sighted in, okay, and your group's consistently low, then what I typically like to do is move my rest up a little bit. If my group's consistently high, then I'll move it down a little bit. If it's left, I move the rest to the left. If it's right, I move the rest to the right. Basically, you're kind of following it like you would a paper tear. And so, or you would go opposite of what you would do on a paper tear, right? So basically, I'm just adjusting my rest to try to find the most forgiving point of that particular bow. And every bow's different, but that's kind of one of those things that, like I said, you know, as an amateur, you can go and do some of these things and it might help bring you to that next level, because a lot of amateurs have the same abilities, if not more, than a lot of the pro shooters. It's just, like I said, I feel like there's very few distinct things that set some people back versus the others. And I think it's just, you know, I was kind of in the same boat. I'm very stubborn and hard-headed and I don't like change, but you know, sometimes you just got to do what you don't want to do, and that's the only way to get better.
So as what Henry was talking about, as he moves the rest according to how he was grouping on that Vegas round, that tournament or that practice session, whatever he's doing, he's moving the rest instead of making adjustments to the sight. Somebody would say, why wouldn't he just make adjustments to the sight? Well, what we're talking about is after he's already felt like he sighted in, and when he's already got a good factory or a pro shop tune done to the bow to begin with. So this would be that next level. So it would be that small adjustment that a lot of times archers are afraid to make, assuming that the arrow coming out level might be the best thing for them. So, of course, you could just move your sights, but he's talking about something that reoccurs over and over. And then, you know, the bows are under several hundred pounds of pressure just holding them together to look like a bow, not to mention when you draw and shoot it over and over. So there's always these dynamic things that happen with the string stretch. You know, BCY is one of the top manufacturers on the planet, along with Brownell and a couple of other main string makers, that they will never tell you there is zero creep to a string set, because they know their strings, they have to flex and move some, or they're so rigid on shot that they would cause the limbs and cams to crush and break. So there's got to be some flex like a rubber band. So that too can change your setup. Well, we appreciate you guys tuning in with us, and hopefully we've touched base about a little bit of who we are and what we're going to discuss each time we do a podcast. And we're also excited about this new battleground location that Henry's going to be running. If you want to check us out, we're at archeryworld.net, and you're welcome to shop online with us for what we can sell. There's some restrictions that we can't sell bows of certain manufacturers or certain models, but everything else is good to go on that. And we also just enjoy the sport of archery to the point where we've just decided we talk about this all the time. Why not share it with our listeners that have all these questions? So hopefully we'll get that, and we'll be doing interviews throughout this season as well.
If you guys got any questions or topics that you guys would like us to hit, don't be afraid to reach out to us. You know, we'd love to talk about whatever you guys want to hear outside of what we got scheduled for you guys. You know, we do have quite a few topics that we do want to run over. You know, like I mentioned before, FOC tunes, arrow setups, all that sort of stuff. So if you got any ideas or people that you might like to hear on our podcast, you know, just let us know and we will reach out.